Hey guys, how are you doing? Welcome back to the podcast. In today's podcast, we'll be touching on content creation companies such as Netflix, HBO Max. So by HBO Max, we simply mean Warner Brothers, Discovery Plus. I don't know what their new name is, but they just made headlines when they started announcing that they won't be allowing their movie Batwoman to come out and Scooby-Doo to come out. And also that there will be restructuring the business or essentially laying off some workers from their HBO Max as they combine HBO Max with Discovery Plus, their streaming platforms. Anyway, we'll get into all of those. Here's the intro.
Hey, welcome to the conversation.
Netflix remains the world's largest streaming service, but the company reported its first quarterly loss in subscribers in more than a decade earlier this year and warned that it expects to lose 2 million global subscribers in second quarter. That would be the single largest quarterly loss in the company's history. It's possible the losses will be even worse than projected. Microeconomic trends are worrisome. Concern of a possible recession and rampant inflation may already be slowing down spending in the U.S. Netflix standard US plan is $15.49 a month, making it pricier than all the major streaming services. That could make it the first option people cancel when they look to save money. Competition also continues to ramp up. By the end of the year, HBO Max will likely add Discovery Plus' entire slate of content to its service, which costs $14.99 a month or $9.99 with ads. Disney last week increased the price of ESPN Plus by $3 a month to $9.99. but kept its bundled offering of Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus the same at $13.99 a month. That may lead to more customers for the Disney bundle, another potential alternative to Netflix. You know, one of the struggles that Netflix faces is, well, it's not a struggle, but like their main advantage was they were the first mover in this field. They were the first company that we all know, like when you think of streaming a movie, the first thing that comes to your mind is Netflix and chill. You know, it's about watching anything on Netflix. But what has happened and what has been a big problem for them is the content-wise, when Disney started taking away their content and all these other content creators started taking away their content and they had to start creating their own originals, has been the increase in competition. So it's been difficult for them. And I do believe in a concept called cannibalization, because I don't really think like there's 200 million separate Netflix subscribers and 90 million Discovery Plus, HBO Max or whatever. I feel like those are like the same people. So one of the challenges that I feel that Netflix has run into has been that situation, whereas the room for growth is very limited because of the competition. When you're looking at HBO Max, Crave, when you're looking at all these platforms, is you have one person having the Disney bundle, you have one person having Netflix, another person having Prime. So if you have over 10 subscriptions just to watch one show and you only have 24 hours in a day, you know, and over that 24 hours, you're spending almost 4 hours on streaming a movie or something like that, you will soon run into a situation where the growth curve has to turn and just straighten, because I don't believe that the market, I do understand that when you're looking at the numbers for companies like Facebook, where they have 1.5 billion users, but then for Facebook, a household is considered different users, whereas with Netflix, so let's say for Facebook in a family of five, those will be five different users, but for Netflix, only one person is paying, so it'll be one user. You might have all these eyeballs, and I feel like that's why they're making the move to advertising, because once they move to advertising, then rather than looking at their accounts as individual households, now you can look at how many people are signed in per account. So now you have five different profiles, which can then become five different users. So that then makes sense why they're now trying to move into advertising rather than just focusing on household income. Because, yeah, that is the way forward. Netflix also plans to crack down on password sharing across the globe, a process that could add tens of millions of new subscribers over time. Netflix estimates more than 100 million households globally don't pay for Netflix, with over 30 million of them in the US and Canada. And this is true. I know friends and friends of people who share their passwords because it makes no sense, you know, having an individual account when you can share. And I think what's happening and the problem that they had from the beginning, which was an advantage of like having no commercials on their platform, has turned around to bite them, especially as they seek to grow. The problem with being a profit organization is, you know, you have a fiduciary duty to your shareholders and they like seeing that money roll in. And the best way to do this is through growth of users. And if you're looking at 100 million households globally that don't pay, you are looking at, we're stuck at 200 million. If we have those 100 million people paying, we will have 300 million. But I do believe this will be a challenge. I don't know how they'll do it. Because trust me, if I'm in Canada watching Netflix, when I do go to Zimbabwe, I do plan on using my same account to watch some Netflix, you know what I mean? And so how they'll curb this thing is going to be interesting. Another challenge that Netflix has been facing is almost 800,000 UK households cancelled their subscription to Netflix or Amazon Prime between April and June as the cost of living crisis forces streaming fans to cut back on the number of services they pay for to just a few favorites. And this is true. If you've been listening to my content, the first thing that I suggest cancelling is Netflix. Because I'm like, yo, this thing is unnecessary. To be honest with you, if you're outside working all the time, what's the point of paying for Netflix? Like, somebody help me understand this. Like, what is it? Is it necessary paying for it? Or is it something that you have to move forward from eventually? The number of homes with access to at least one subscription video on demand SVOD service fell from 19.75 million in the first quarter to 19.19 million at the end of the second quarter, a net decrease of 382,000, according to the latest survey by broadcast audience Bridge Bub. The number of UK homes with access to Prime Video, which is accessible as part of Amazon Prime subscription service, fell by 589,000 in quarter from 13.35 million to 12.76. Sky is now TV dropped from 43,000 homes, taking a subscriber base to 2.7 million households at the end of the second quarter. The numbers we report today show SVOD services aren't immune as households work hard to make ends meet. And we don't ask households why they chose to add or drop subscriptions, although the sharp increase in energy prices in March, April must have been a catalyst for people to review all their monthly outgoings. And this is true, like for platforms such as Netflix, where you do not really necessarily watch Netflix your entire day. You have periods of time where you stop watching the platform and it makes no sense paying it, especially if you're working 2-3 jobs. Why keep paying for a service that you don't use? However, it's not all doom and gloom for the UK streaming sector. Disney Plus, which continues to show growth globally, added 91,000 homes in the second quarter to take its customer base in the country to 6.262 million homes, and Apple TV Plus, which stunned its much deeper pocketed and more popular rivals by becoming the first streaming service to win a Best Picture, added 43,000 homes to its UK subscriber base. So yeah, looking at what's been happening recently, thanks to the global recession, it's understandable that companies such as Netflix have started seeing decline in their numbers. I'd say that the thing that explains this the most is, as your cost of living goes up and you have to cut bills, unnecessary bills have to leave. And unfortunately, Netflix is one of them. And when you look at countries like the UK, where I don't really know much about the UK, but I'm assuming they have cable and you can live without Netflix. So those are the first places that you go into and cut off. And then you move forward from that, you know, and you see the best ways to move forward for yourself. And you find that what Netflix is facing as a challenge is, how do you grow? You know, their growth rates to 200 million was amazing. But then the question is, how do you move beyond that? Because when you do have platforms such as Facebook, which has 1.5 billion, Twitter, which is around 200 and something million users, you do understand that the market does exist. The internet market has growth. Global population is around 8 billion. So there is room to grow. You know, these are global firms, so there is room to grow. But the challenge that they have is they do offer a nice-to-have product. It's not a need. You don't need to watch a video. You can just go read a book, you know, when you need entertainment and you cannot afford it. These are the first places that go. Just like cinema will suffer, especially if we enter into a recession, and hopefully not a depression. But, like, that's just the thing that is going to occur. What I believe that companies such as Netflix should be doing is, in the next period, couple of months, it's survival. It's just about, you know, putting in surviving mechanisms and tactics. But essentially, there will be a bounce back. People will recover from this. Like, this recession is something that governments and people have been preparing for, that they've known was coming. So eventually, there will be solutions and there will be light at the end of the tunnel. God knows when that is, but still, it will happen and they will find a way around it. But also, other thing is with tech companies, they do have a lot of cash sitting around. So there is room to, you know, mitigate and be prepared for these situations. If you're not prepared, then, hey, I don't know. But what I do know and understand that is these numbers are going to continue going down, especially if they make their move of trying to stop people from sharing passwords. I do not know how that will work. It will be interesting to see how they make it work. But then I'm like, if people are not willing to pay today, I don't think forcing them to pay will work as well. And one of the challenges that Netflix does face is a lot of people, when they watch shows, what happened with like the Marvel deal when they started removing Marvel and Disney came along, is a lot of people were fans of Disney shows, and those people followed Disney to Disney platform, to the Disney platform. And then when you're looking at what's about to happen with HBO Max and Discovery Plus, that's another thing whereby, you know, the shows that were on HBO, I remember if you're a fan of Game of Thrones, at some point you could only get it from HBO. So you would be on that platform. So eventually it's going to be interesting to see what happens and how they handle it. But I do believe they do have a future. I feel like content has been a thing since the beginning of time, ever since cameras became a thing. And even prior to that, you had reading books. So they are not in trouble. It's not like this is the end of the world for them. It's just that they are nice to have products. It's not I need Netflix to survive or my life will be a living hell, you know. But what I do believe is opportunities is there for them to keep on growing. I just don't know how they'll do it, but it'll be interesting to see. The other thing that we have to understand, I often see people criticize Netflix for when they did a 180 and were like, yeah, we'll start using ads on our platform. The thing that happens with ads is, from a revenue perspective, content makes money from ads. So whilst Netflix was not actively advertising on their platform, all their content had brand positioning and brand placements in those shows and sponsorships and everything. Like, there's multiple ways of getting products in the eyeballs of people. But what happens is, a lot of times there are huge marketing budgets. You know, companies spend over $500,000 on a 30-second commercial that needs eyeballs. So, for example, how if you understand how content makes money, it's all about, you know, eyeballs. It's all about the people watching the commercial, and then that in turn means reach. So when you have a platform that has 200 million plus 100 million people who don't pay for it, you're assuming you have a 300 million base of users, and that in that 300 million is just households. They say on average a household is 3 people, and this is mother, father, daughter. And we're not talking about college houses where you can have 5 people in the same household. We're already hitting almost 1 billion people who use Netflix. And for them, if you have 1 billion people, how much would companies such as American Express, such as flying companies, especially now where companies need to reach more people in order to keep people interested in their brands, how much are they willing to pay just to get those views? You know, I don't know how they'll measure their CPM, because one way the internet works is, for advertisers, they tend to pay per CPM, which simply means cost per 1,000 mu, which is cost per 1,000 views. So if you have 1 billion people, you divide 1 billion by 1,000 people watching a certain commercial at a certain period of time, and then marketers will pay X amount of dollars, because if we've invested 500,000 into creating a 30-second thing, we would be interested in letting people watch it. You know what I mean? So it's a good way for them to earn revenue, even though their subscriber base might be like, nah, we do not want that. But then the thing is, when it comes to content, you, the subscriber base, are the value. You know, the value is in you, the person watching. It's your data. It's everything about you. It's what's valuable to businesses, because especially to marketers, that's the data they use to be able to sell your product in order to create revenue that keeps the whole machine oiled. Moving on, today the media the merger between HBO Max and Discovery Plus will combine the best elements of both services. They said HBO Max has had performance and customer issues, but offers a rich set of features. Discovery Plus has more limited features, but provide a more robust underlying delivery capability. Warner Brothers Discovery said its studio segment notched revenue of more than $2.79 billion, up 3% in pro forma basis. The company's TV network saw revenue rise 1% to $5.74 billion. Driven by 2% increase in advertising that was bolstered by sports. The company said HBO Max, HBO, and Discovery Plus subscribers combined were 92.1 million, up about 1.7 million from 90.4 million the prior quarter. That's up 22%, 75.8 million on pro forma basis versus a year earlier. But WBD streaming business lost subscribers domestically in Q2, dropping 300,000, falling from 53.3 million in the first quarter to 53 million as of June 30. During the presentation, Zavala repeatedly pointed to the company's DC superhero properties, including Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, as central to the company's broader content strategy to better marshal those properties. Zaslav cited his previously reported goal of putting together a team with a 10-year plan focusing just on DC, similar to the approach Disney has taken with Marvel Studios, as run by Kevin Feige, but he did not announce who would be heading this team. The decision to shelve two nearly completed feature films, including a superhero property with a $90 million budget, stunned the wider industry on Wednesday. Batgirl directors Adil and Balaa released a statement that they were saddened and shocked by the news, and star Leslie Grace says she was proud of the love, hard work, and intention of all incredible cast and talent crew put into the film. On Tuesday, Variety reported that the main driver for the decision was the shift in company strategy away from creating feature films exclusively to HBO Max, as was the case with Batgirl and Scooby-Doo following the merger of Warner Brothers and Discovery. The idea of expensive films going direct to streaming, we can't find an economic case for it, we can't find an economic value to it, so we're making a strategic shift, as Zaslav said during the Q&A. So the one thing that's going to happen with Warner Brothers, and this has been an interesting thing, is how they've run their DC communities. Like, they didn't care, you know, the way Marvel ran the past decade, and it seems they're doing so this year. For me, they lost me after Endgame, but, you know, they do have a younger audience to cater to who probably would be spending more money than I would on them. But it's interesting. It was interesting to see how DC failed to keep up, especially in terms of movies. I felt like when Christopher Nolan did the Batman trilogy, they had a great alley-oop and somewhere to build from, but that didn't happen. But what's been happening with HBO Max, and this is something where it becomes interesting as we were speaking about Netflix, is they're starting to realize there is no case. From a financial perspective, it's very hard to make a case of putting a movie, of investing a movie, for example, $90 million into Batgirl and having it launched straight on streaming. Because the thing with streaming is, once you charge somebody $9 or whatever, $16 for the month, that's it. And your revenue earning capacity is very low. Whereas compared to putting a movie in a show, in a cinema, what happens with cinemas is, if a person pays, let's say, $27 to go watch a movie, if they want to watch it again, they have to pay another $27, especially if they want to watch it with a friend. Whereas compared to having it straight to streaming, it's $27 on the streaming platform. It's the $16 that a person has paid for the month. They watch it. If they want to watch it again, you know, they've already paid the same amount of money, so you do not make money. So from a financial perspective, the streaming service does leave a lot of question. You know, it's like, is it worth it? And one of the things that we have to understand as audiences is that content creation is a cash-burning business. Creating videos, creating content is highly expensive. It takes a lot of money. If you're on YouTube and you've listened to Mr. Beast speak, he always talks about how much money he spends on his videos, where he's like, I spend almost $4 million a month on YouTube videos. Now think about making movies. I remember for Avengers, I think they invested almost $300 million into that. So the thing is with creating content is it's a highly, highly expensive thing to run. For example, in making such a podcast that we are listening to right now, it costs me a lot of money, because at this point in time, when you think about, you would need a videographer. So a videographer will charge you X amount of dollars. You need a producer. You need an editor. You need somebody who handles audio. You need somebody that handles lights. And the cost of production alone, just for a simple podcast, if professionally done, you are looking at something around $10,000 just for the production of a one-person podcast because of the crew that you need behind. However, for us YouTubers, you know, we are one-man bands playing different roles. What then happens for shows such as for big companies like Warner Brothers is instead of having one person do it all, they have to pay different people. And that costs a lot of money. And for that money not to be recovered, that's a shame. And that's a fuss. They cannot just make, you know, the way that we are able to make these videos and then post them on YouTube and hope one day to earn revenue from them. They cannot do that as businesses because they have a fiduciary duty. If someone is giving you money and is investing in you to do something with it, you know, you cannot then just turn around and be like, yeah, we are hopeful, you know, we will make our money back. It doesn't work that way. These people are judged per month, per year, per quarter in terms of how is the business performing. And from a business case, making content and not making money back, it makes no sense at all. And I understand that. And I feel like one of the challenges that a lot of people have learned from streaming was when you looked at the success story that Netflix is and was, it's that one made it more attractive to be like, oh, there's an opportunity to make money because people love streaming. And the pandemic also opened up gates and doors because I think Disney Plus became a thing in the pandemic. However, one of the challenges that then you have for this traditional businesses that are charged traditionally or that are judged traditionally is how do you make money and where is the money? How much money are you making? You know, and especially when you're facing economic times that we are in where it's like a recession, it's like, oh, yeah, whilst we value, you know, having these platforms, it's expensive. So I feel, but also in terms of them going to the cinema, it depends on the type of shows that they'll be making for the cinema because you're not guaranteed success in the cinema as well. You know, you're not really guaranteed. The way content works is it's expensive to produce and it's expensive to market as well because you look at how much, look at the trailers that they put out, how much they have to pay just to get reach of eyeballs. So it'll be interesting to see how Warner Brothers navigates this world. With that said, I would like to explain to you guys a little bit of how content companies or content creators make money. If you've ever thought of making money or of making content, why it's difficult and why you're starting to see a lot of shifts and moves and strategies that are being implemented by these companies, I'll break it down for you in a way I hope that makes sense. So when you go about creating content, as you become a content creator, the thing that happens, let's say you're making video, okay? We'll speak about video. If you're making video, you need to shoot, you need to produce the video. So you need somebody who comes up with an idea, say a script writer. You have somebody that writes down the idea. You have somebody that writes it down. That person needs to be paid. From that person, we move into production. So we move from the script and then into production. Production, we are talking about videography. We are talking about cinematography. We are talking about locations. We're talking about actors, we're talking about the whole thing of creating this thing. This thing can take from a week to months of creation, of just producing and recording videos, and there's art in it. There's no price you can pay for art. And based on the talent that you're working with, your budgets, they cost you X amount of dollars. So for example, you're investing $3 million into creating a short film or something like that. You know, big budget film goes from 300 million to 3 million. What you have to understand is how this financing happens is a lot of times these businesses, they get loans from banks and they take it as an investment. So they take these loans from these banks and they are charged a certain interest. It will not be a crazy interest on it. It might be 2%, but 2% of 300 million is a lot of money, you know. And then they take it and they invest into these films. So that's what happens. That's how content is created. And then once the content is created, the video exists, the final product is made, the movie is made, how people make money is the money doesn't come from the video. So for example, if you have a camera like I do and I just shoot a video, there's no money that I'll make here. The value is in the audience. The value is in the people who watch the content. So the first thing that happens is, for example, if you want to have your content placed on a platform, say a cable channel or whatever, A, you either pay to be put on their platform or they pay you to be put on their platform. So that's where a little bit of business goes on, is who has the value, who values what and who needs what. If a channel, if a distribution center needs your product, they'll pay you for it. Or if you need to be on their shelf, so for example, take it as going to a grocery store. The grocery store needs groceries to sell, all right? So what happens is they'll come and buy from a grocery maker, you know, for example, Kellogg's or whoever makes cereal. They'll go and buy from Kellogg's and then sell. Or what other companies will do is they'll be like, hey, I have a platform. I have a grocery store. You have Kellogg's. You can come and sell in my platform. I have this number of people who come and buy from here. So come and sell. Pay me X amount of dollars to have your product on my shelves. When it sells, I take my piece. You take your piece and we move on. So that's what happens with content as well. It's a similar thing. And what then happens after that is, in order to make money, the audience are the most valuable asset. So the eyeballs that are watching the content. So in this, that's where we have things such as product placement. With product placement, what you are simply saying is, hey, I'm making a film, $300 million film. I anticipate having a global reach with over, say, 1 billion people watching it, because the world is made of 8 billion people. I have 1 billion people who are going to watch it. You are Coca-Cola. This will go, you have more reach. And then Coca-Cola will say, okay, based off of your history, you reach X amount of people when you do cinema. So like, for example, when you're watching those movies and the cars that they're using is all Audis or Toyotas, a lot of that is product placement. So those people pay. So that's part of how films make money. So like from there, those sponsorship deals, they start earning revenue, starting in production as well. So once you have that, that's one way of making money. So if you're doing this YouTube thing, just to have, say, if me and Apple had a deal, they'll be paying me for having this iPad on my platform, you know. So that would be number one. The number two way that they earn money is rights. So what happens is globally, there are different cinemas and cinemas need content to show. So what the cinemas will do is they will then come and ask for the rights to play these videos in their cinema. So globally, they'll come and say, hey, I'll pay X amount of dollars for this. Then this is guaranteed money up front. This, the Warner Brothers or the production company, that's how they make their money. And then these guys will make money from the gates. And then that's how they get rights throughout the world. And then that's how you make money. But the essential thing that is being paid for is the eyeballs that watch. So the most valuable asset to a content creator is you, the audience, because marketers are willing to pay money to get access to you, to reach you, especially when they know who is going to watch. So if my podcast has 1 million people watching it, I'm then able to go to Apple or whoever and say, listen, I reach 1 million people. These are the people that watch my show. This is their data. This is what they do. How much are you willing to compensate me for that? And then they'll be like, yeah, we'll give you X amount of dollars for you to place, you know, a Coke bottle right here. And then that's how content creators make money. So when you look at companies such as Netflix, how these people have been making money is they build this platform that has content on it that people come and watch. And how they made money was, okay, when you come and sign up, for example, what you used to do when you had to go get a DVD straight from the shop was you go to this place, when you get the DVD, you pay for that DVD for renting it out, and then you go, you watch it, and then you send it back. And then when they became an online platform, they were like, listen, you don't have to do all that. We'll give you a subscription-based service where for $10 a month, you can watch whatever you want to watch. Just pay us $10 every single month. Now you don't have to go out and rent DVDs. And what are the chances that you watch for 24 hours a day a movie? You're not going to do that. You're probably going to watch Netflix twice, two or three times a week, you know, or unless, I don't know, you don't have much to do with your life and you're watching it every single minute. But still, there's a lot of content to run through. So then that's how Netflix made its money. So if you're looking at the potential of having 200 million users on the platform paying $9 or $10 on average, that's $2 billion a month that Netflix is making. So for every payment, and this is a plus or minus, right? So what then happens is with that sort of business model, there's a limit to it. So once you start making $2 billion a month, you're guaranteed $24 billion every year. So what then happens with businesses is that's when our businesses are judged. The businesses are judged in, okay, in 2020, you made us $24 billion. In 2021, you made us $24 billion. 2022, you can't make $24 billion, okay? Now you have to keep growing. And then what then happens as a challenge for firms such as Netflix, because remember, Netflix doesn't do advertising. So how does Netflix make money? And Netflix buys its content. So in most cases, that product placement money doesn't go to Netflix. It goes to the producers of the show. And in most cases as well, those product placement, that money is used to produce the show. So it's basically these brands sponsoring the production of the show. What then happens for films such as Netflix, how they stop making money is without advertising. Because advertising, the good thing about advertising or the bad thing about advertising is advertising is paid by this thing called CPM, digital marketing, which simply means CPM means cost per mu, which just means cost per thousand views. So if you have 200 million people on your platform, you say 200 million divided by 1,000, whatever that number is the cost of those views. So Netflix will then charge X amount of dollars to the advertisers, which will pay them. So when you have a household with five people, five separate accounts, if it's 200 million people, and we're assuming each household has five people, that's a billion people. For a billion people, it's no longer 200 million divided by 1,000, it's a billion divided by 1,000, and then Netflix gets to keep that. So this is another way of making income. So, but however, income is only driven by the eyeballs watching these platforms. So the value for content creators, be it Netflix or myself, is you, the individuals watching the content. The more people you reach, the more reach you have, the more you can make money. Because, and it's not really the money you can make, it's the more people you reach, right? The more marketers want to reach them. So you have to then go look for somebody who's willing to pay you to reach those same people. However, your content has value for a content distribution site. So sites such as YouTube, the benefit that YouTube has is it's free for you to upload your video to YouTube. However, YouTube will share the spoils with you for their advertisers. So on YouTube, I think as a creator, you make 65% of the money that you generate, but YouTube is just a platform where you put your videos on, right? So once you're in the AdSense program, you make X amount of dollars with YouTube. However, it's not really a lot because the person that makes a lot of money is YouTube. Let's say YouTube has a billion users and then they have 100 million content creators. If they have 100 million content creators, you know, and they're getting 45% from each and every one of them, and they're not paying everyone who's under 1,000, it's a good business for YouTube. But for you as a content creator, you cannot then just be loyal to YouTube. The good thing is you can put your content on different platforms. And eventually what you want to hope for is to have access to an audience that's willing to pay for your production. Because the thing is, and I'll repeat, what makes content super expensive is it's time consuming, and also you need super skilled people to do it, to be able to have the movies that you have. You know, you have stunts people, you have editors, you have all these groups of people that make it a cash burning sector of industry. So it's quite interesting to see the strategies that these people come up with for their firms. And as content creators, how we also have to smarten up and start thinking of ways of like, hey, how am I going to make money out of this? Because what happens a lot of times is somebody has to pay for it. You know, somebody has to pay. And in every sector, in every industry, it's just the way it works. So it's quite interesting to see when you look at Warner Media and Discovery joining just to combine their platforms. You know, they all move from whatever they were at to having 90 million people, 90 times 16. And then you're looking at ad revenues and stuff like that. They will make money. But yeah, it's sad that in for businesses, you know, they're judged based off of growth. You're not judged based off, oh yeah, you made us $24 billion last month. Hey man, we still need more, you know. So it'll be interesting to see. I hope you learned a little bit of how content makes money. But, you know, there is room because content never dies, man. Content will hardly die. Content has been a thing since people were riding on rocks. If you go to Africa, in those caves, that's content, you know. Storytelling was content. And back in the day, people were not doing it for money. But being a good storyteller would make you popular and would save your life, which was a form of value right there. But the most valuable thing would have been, how many people can you have sitting down? You know, if you have 1,000 people sitting down and somebody can come in and say, listen, this is a new iPad. Instead of riding on the bricks, you can now ride on this. Give me your goat. You know, somebody would have given you a goat for that audience. So the most valuable asset that a content creator has is their audience. So never forget that. With that said, I hope you guys enjoy this. The little dog upstairs is barking, so we should call it a day. I'll see you guys next week. There will always be news. See ya.